from the heart of our nation's capital. This is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. So much happened this past week that I'm going to sum up today's show a little differently. Later on, our guests will discuss China, Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, a sex education walkout, and Mike Pompeo's confirmation hearing. But first, we'll tackle the terrible tragedy of Syria and the U.S. response to it. On Monday, Representative Joe Wilson joined Tony with his thoughts on the chemical weapons attack by Syria's government on their own people. Here's Tony Perkins.
Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, Tony, it's an honor to be with you. I appreciate your service and the Family Research Council. You make a positive difference for our country.
Well, thank you, Congressman. I appreciate that, and I know we have a lot in common in our interest in what's happening in the Middle East. And I want to ask you this question. The president has said that he will be making a decision as to a U.S. response within the next 24 to 40 hours. Once we've been able to gather more information, the part of getting the intelligence together has been a little bit of a challenge. But based upon what we know so far, who do you believe is behind this attack?
Well, Tony, I believe it's very clear. It's the Syrian dictatorship, Bashar Assad, an attack on the last stronghold in the Damascus area. And it's particularly horrific because many of the persons who were murdered were women and children who had taken sanctuary in basements to escape bombardment. And, of course, the sarin gas that was used reached the basement.
Now, Congressman, we were told, led to believe, that Syria handed over their chemical weapons. I mean, this has long been an issue, even in the previous administration. I mean, how much of this do they still have?
Well, Tony, it's particularly sad. This is revealing that the Russian Federation has been very duplicitous. They back the dictatorship, Assad dictatorship. They were supposed to be the prior president, Barack Obama, Secretary John Kerry, they indicated that Russia would be the party that would carry out the agreement to remove chemical weapons of mass destruction from Syria. Now we find out clearly that that's not the case.
I mean, that's like the fox guarding the hen house. I mean, Russia has a vested interest in keep propping up Assad and keeping them there in the Middle East. I mean, that is really the anchor for Russia's presence in a lot of the things that they are wanting to accomplish in the Middle East.
And sadly, Tony, it also reflects a working relationship with the Iranian dictatorship. And then clearly, the goal of Iran, and sadly, Russia is now complicit, is death to America, death to Israel. And so this is so serious. And the great news is that we have President Donald Trump, not Barack Obama. We also have Secretary Jim Mattis as the Secretary of Defense. And I was very proud today to see UN Ambassador Nikki Haley. What a great spokesman she is for the people of the United States. And then today is a very significant day. There was a new National Security Advisor. H.R. McMaster served with the distinction, but now we have John Bolton, who is a person that I know that you've worked with over the years, know what extraordinary individual he is. And they will all be providing the best advice possible for the president to protect American families.
Well, Congressman Wilson, I think you point out that something that's very significant. I do not see any weak link in that chain that you just described when it comes to national defense and the interest of America abroad. So I think you're absolutely right. The president's getting good counsel. But we do know this, Congressman Wilson, that the president, while he listens to and takes counsel, he also makes his own decisions. My take on this, and I saw this last time where there was chemical weapons used against civilians, and it resulted in the Tomahawk missiles being used. This president, obviously touched by the horrific nature of this being used on women and children. What might we see as a military response?
Well, and you're dead right. Wasn't it wonderful to see his immediate response last year, which at least delayed for at least 9 or 12 months, further chemical attacks. But I have faith in the judgment of the president with the information that will be provided to him as he said, by his generals. I thought that was reassuring, too, that he is taking the top advice from extraordinary people who understand the threat to American families of the use of weapons of mass destruction.
I mean, this obviously alters the conversation that was taking place last week and the prior to that, where the president was talking about beginning to withdraw troops from Syria. I mean, I would think that Syria is not too smart in perpetrating this at this point, because this is only going to further the resolve of the United States to not just eliminate ISIS, but all bad actors in that region of the world. And we've already, you know, we don't have, I don't think Trump has those erasable red lines like the previous administration. I think they've made it very clear how we're going to respond to, you know, a dictator that uses chemical weapons on innocent women and children.
And Tony, in fact, the president has put together an alliance, and that is beginning with Israel, but we also have an alliance with Egypt, with Saudi Arabia, with the Emirates. We've got a number of nations in the Middle East that are working with us against the Assad regime, against the Iranian regime, and against Russian influence. And so the president it should be given a lot of credit for putting an alliance together of very extraordinary and capable allies.
Well, Syria wasn't the only big foreign relations issue in Washington, D.C. this week. Trade with China has been a hot topic. And Southeast Asia expert Gordon Chang joined Tony to discuss what's going on between the U.S. and China.
Gordon, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much.
Hey, I was just telling folks I ran into you in the lobby at Fox News on Friday in New York, and we were discussing this. I had just finished an interview with Neil Cavuto on this topic, and so I asked you what you thought of the president standing up to China, and then I also read your comments today in the USA Today, but I wanted to get you on the program. So is the president taking the right posture with China?
Oh, absolutely. You know, nobody, of course, wants tariffs. Nobody wants the investment curbs that the president has talked about, but they're absolutely necessary because everything that we have tried in the past, dialogue, taking cases to the World Trade Organization, trying to rally the Europeans, unfortunately has not worked. And what the Chinese are doing right now is stealing somewhere between $225 to $600 billion worth of U.S. intellectual property every year. That number comes from the IP Commission, in other words, the Blair-Huntsman Report. They did a 2017 update to their landmark 2013 study. Now, between those two numbers, not all of that is China, but most of it is. And so what they're doing is they're robbing innovation. I mean, we have an innovation economy, Tony. And if you don't permit the U.S. to innovate by taking all of the technology, there's not much left of the U.S. economy.
So I'm wondering, Gordon, is this where we see the art of the deal versus the art of war? I mean, we see, you know, China here, and you make a good point that, you know, they're really not a co-equal with America when it comes to their economy. I mean, their economy, $12.1 trillion versus the U.S. $19.8 trillion. They are the ones that are enjoying a windfall from the trade with the United States, a $375 billion trade surplus. They're the ones that have something to lose here.
They have everything to lose, Tony. First of all, that gap that you mentioned, it's actually growing bigger because in reality, the U.S. economy is growing faster than China's. Last year, 88.8% of China's overall merchandise trade surplus related to sales to the United States. They are dependent on the U.S. economy to an extraordinary degree. We had a $357.2 billion merchandise goods deficit. That means we don't care about trade friction because only trade surplus countries like China do so. And most important that people don't talk about, the U.S., for all the faults of its economy, is stable. China is heading to a debt crisis. Everyone's talking about it, including the governor of the Chinese Central Bank last October. So, you know, right now, President Trump has all the high cards. The question is, does he have the political will to enforce a solution that is advantageous to not only to the United States, but but to the rest of the international community, because China has been undermining our economy and the other economies around the world. Those are the trade partners of China.
So, Gordon, in summary, this is not only a trade issue, but it's also a national security issue.
Absolutely, and that's critical. I mean, China, unfortunately, is challenging not only the United States, but the whole concept of good international order, trying to close off the global commons. It's threatening countries at its periphery, to its south and its east. You know, it's challenging the whole notion of a liberal internationalist order, which really the United States put in place after the end of World War II. If China ruled the world, which they really want to and they think they have the right to, it's going to be a pretty awful place, Tony.
All right, Gordon Chang, final question for you. If the president holds his posture, holds his ground, and I have no reason to think that he won't, but how long does it take for this to play out before China says, okay, we'll sit down at the table?
I think it'll take a long time for them to come to sit down at the table. Right now, Chinese officials are saying they won't negotiate. I think that that's really just sort of puffery. But nonetheless, the things that are causing the trade imbalance are core to the Communist Party's system. And so this is going to take a long time to change. And we're not going to have good relations with China until the Communist Party no longer rules.
Gordon Chang, as always, great to have you in the program. It was great to see you Friday up in New York.
And thank you so much, Tony.
If you want to find out more about Representative Joe Wilson or Gordon Chang, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available. And you can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back to talk about a surprise announcement from the Capitol.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, and freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to TonyPerkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at TonyPerkins.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Wednesday of this week, many people were surprised, and you may be one of them, by the announcement that Speaker of the House Paul Ryan would not be seeking re-election. Congressman Mark Meadows, who is the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, joined Tony to talk about it.
Congressman Meadows, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you, and as always, my best to you and your listeners. And it has been an interesting day here on Capitol Hill with the Speaker stepping down. And so obviously, it's going to prompt all kinds of questions, but I'm here to hopefully give some insight to the listeners on your behalf.
Where does this leave the Republicans' Congress? What is this, an opportunity? Is it a challenge? What is it?
Well, I think it's more an opportunity than a challenge. Obviously, any time that you have leadership, there are those that will try to jump in the fray who just want another position in Washington, D.C. And if we do that, we will have missed the opportunity. I think the Speaker said it well in that, in leaving it in good hands, the hands that I hope that he's leaving it in, are the hands of the American people. They're the ones with the real insight. They're the ones that understand it. There is not some unbelievable knowledge that gets imparted to members of Congress as they cross the Potomac and come into Washington, D.C. In fact, you can make the case that many of them lose their common sense when they cross the Potomac River, and I think it's a Potomac fever. But it is an opportunity that the conservative cause and those that are listening in right now, where their voice can be heard, not just with leadership changes, but to make sure that the agenda that we put forth really address the concerns. You know, one of the things that's important to me is defunding Planned Parenthood. And now we've been working on that for 35 years. If we can't figure out a way to do it, then we need to figure out someone who will do it. And hopefully, as we look to the future, we'll be able to see some of that getting addressed. But I see it as an opportunity.
Well, for the benefit of our listeners, this is not your first rodeo when it comes to a speaker. I want to remind my remind our listeners that it was Congressman Mark Meadows that introduced a resolution to vacate the chair when John Boehner was a speaker, which most recognize led to him retiring from Congress. Do you anticipate, Mark, that we're going to see, you know, a even more conservative speaker come in behind Speaker Ryan?
Well, I do think that we will see a more conservative speaker for a couple of reasons. One is we have a Republican president in the White House. We, you know, have a Republican Congress and Senate, and the American people are really tired of excuses of not getting things done. And so, I think the odds-on favorite right now are for the two that are already in leadership, in that it would be Leader Kevin McCarthy or Whip Steve Scalise. And obviously, each one of those individuals have their own constituency. It doesn't have to be one of them, and but yet I would, you know, it would be inaccurate to suggest that anyone has more of a support than the two of them at this point. But it's way early in the process.
Right.
Now, everybody's going to say, well, we're going to wait until November or December to see who the new speaker is going to be. I doubt that very seriously. In fact, I think the decision on who the next speaker will be made will be made within the next weeks to months, even anticipation of Speaker Ryan retiring, because they'll want to pass the baton to a new leadership team, cast a vision for the American people leading up to the midterms. And so it does create a little bit of chaos, but I think right now we will start to see a number of people saying, okay, this is what I stand for, this is how I'm going to accomplish it, and this is how we're going to deliver on the promises we made to the American people.
If you want to find out more about Mark Meadows and the Freedom Caucus, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with a protest you can get behind.
Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to FRC.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Angry parents across the nation are planning to remove their children from public schools on April 23rd to protest graphic sex education curriculum being disguised as anti-bullying. Joining Tony to discuss the protest is the activist mommy, Elizabeth Johnston.
Elizabeth, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Thanks so much for having me again.
Well, I want to get an update. As I told you, we want to monitor this very closely as we move to the 23rd, because we want to see as many people as possible participate in this. How's it looking so far?
It's going great. Rush Limbaugh talked about our movement for over an hour last week on his show, which, of course, was huge. Newsweek has covered it, Washington Times, The Blaze, so many places. We have press events now scheduled for April the 23rd in Austin, Texas, San Antonio, Texas, Bloomington, Indiana, Charlotte, North Carolina, Sacramento, California, Spokane, Washington, Martinsburg, West Virginia, Vancouver, Canada, and Melbourne, Australia. I think I got them all in there. So we're in three countries and press events in nine cities across the U.S. from east to west coast. And people all over the nation will be pulling their children out of school. They'll be delivering to them the principal's letter that you can get on our website. We've made it very easy for you. If you go to sexedsitout.com, You'll see we have graphics there. You can print out signs to go to your press event. And we have a press release there, and we have the letter to the principal. We also have evidence of the graphic curriculum. A lot of people are saying, show me the evidence. They find it hard to believe that Planned Parenthood and HRC are actually in our schools. Planned Parenthood, a criminal organization, actually in our schools, that profits from girls getting pregnant because then they go get their abortions at Planned Parenthood, actually in our schools teaching sexuality on during school hours at taxpayer expense. They find it hard to believe, Tony, and when we show them the evidence, they're absolutely livid. And so you can get that evidence at our website, SexEdSitOut.com.
All right, April 23rd, SexEdSitOut.com. They can get all the information they need right there to participate in this and also to know exactly what is going on in the classrooms and what their children are being exposed to. Elizabeth, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to keep tracking this, and we're going to try to help as much as we can to get folks to turn out, be a part of this, pull their kids out of school, and bring attention to this and protect our children. Elizabeth, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
If you want to find out more about the activist mommy or the protest on April 23rd, head over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, I want to invite you to be a part of keeping Washington Watch on the air by going to TonyPerkins.com and making a contribution. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at Mike Pompeo's confirmation hearing.
Where is our country headed? Are we moving in the right direction? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C. and join hundreds of Americans that want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Kirk Cameron, Kellyanne Conway, Secretary Ben Carson, and Sean Hannity. Don't miss the early bird price of $99 at valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salka. This past Thursday, President Trump's nominee for Secretary of State, current CIA Director Mike Pompeo, was grilled by the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Joining Tony to discuss the hearing was FRC's Travis Weber, the director of the Center for Religious Liberty.
Travis, welcome back.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. I know, Travis, we're monitoring this because this is something we've been obviously very interested in, because we want to see the State Department return to one of its primary missions, and that is in promoting national security. Part of that is the Congress identified almost 25 years ago that a part of that is promoting religious freedom in our foreign policy, which has been absent in the last decade.
Very much so. And Mike Pompeo is confirmed as Secretary of State. I believe that we will see a real emphasis on that issue in a way that the United States needs to be taking the lead on. In his opening statement, he mentioned the need to lead on human rights around the world because the United States is uniquely blessed in what we've been given, and we need to serve others by leading by example. And so I'm confident that he'll do that in the area of religious freedom. And return us to a time in which President Reagan used the issue of human rights and the political rights of the dissidents in repressive countries to push for their freedom. I think the United States really needs to get back to doing that, and I think Mike Pompeo can help us get there.
You know, it was not discussed a whole lot, just kind of on a couple of occasions. Almost a side issue in today's hearing when we talk about religious freedom. But some would say, well, we're talking about the Secretary of State. We're talking about foreign policy. What does religious freedom have to do with it? Why should we be promoting religious freedom around the globe?
Yeah. So, religious freedom, we've often looked at the issue as something where someone's imprisoned for their religious practice and we pressure the government to have them released, which is good and important, and we should do that. But more broadly, we need to consider how the promotion of religious freedom in a society will lead to that society's stability and thus lead to the stability of the world in which we live and lessen the national security threats that these vacuums pose to the United States and authoritarian regimes pose to the United States. What these regimes and these places that are vacuums around the world have in common is that they are repressive of religious freedom. And if we study this and really look at it, it's in the strategic interests of the United States to be promoting religious freedom around the world. You know, and that's something I think Mike Pompeo will take into consideration as he looks at what the strategic interest of the U.S. is around the world.
And we've talked about this on Washington Watch. The studies, the actual analysis of this data now that's out there that shows that those countries that respect religious freedom, they have greater economic stability because they also tend to have laws that are more respectful of private property and economic development. And then, as you pointed out, they're more stable from a military standpoint or from a security standpoint, less likely to be an issue for us in which we would have to use our military.
Very true. Overwhelmingly, the countries and places that are threats to the U.S. are violators of religious freedom, whether it's Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, or the vacuum that ISIS swept into in northern Iraq and Syria. What they have in common is the violation of religious freedom, the inability of people to live out their faith individually in their lives, free to choose the faith they want to worship and live that out. That's what they have in common, even though the circumstances look different in all these places. And so if we look at that as the United States and say what is in our interest to promote around the world, religious freedom as we've defined it, as it's defined in international human rights law, including the ability to choose your faith and live it out, is a basic concept, and we need to engage the broader foreign policy community on this fact.
Looking at the overall confirmation hearing today, what would you say?
I think he did a great job. You know, he has people like Senator Menendez saying he may vote for him and expressing hope given his positions today and the foreign policy expertise that he presented at that hearing.
You know, and I give credit to those Democrats who will look at it on the face of what the role of the Secretary of State is, and the fact that I think he will be, one of the most qualified when he, and I thought he handled the question really well about, you know, people said, well, you're a defense hawk. And he said, look, I've actually served in the military. I know what it's like to call upon men and women in uniform that would put them in harm's way. All right, Travis, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.